I did not grow up here at Cliff Temple, but just about everyone else in my family did. And so it's always very special to me to have the chance to preach here, as I did most recently at my uncle James Webb's memorial service a few weeks ago, which was a very special time for our family to be here in this sanctuary. I'm going to read today from the book of Genesis. It's an ancient story, Genesis 21, starting with verse 8, Genesis chapter 21. The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar, the Egyptian, had borne to Abraham was mocking. And she said to Abraham, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son, Isaac." The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, "Do not be so distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring." Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bow shot away, for she thought, "I cannot watch the boy die." And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What's the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. And while he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. My daughter, Ivy, left on Friday for 2 weeks in Africa. She's going with a group from her high school, Pascal High School in Fort Worth. And they're going with an organization called Build On. And they're going to go into a remote village in the country of Malawi, and there they're going to build a school. Right now, the closest school for the kids that live in that village is 12 miles away. And so to have a school now in their village will be an incredible opportunity for those kids, particularly the girls, who will have an opportunity to get an education there. And so Friday evening, I took her to the airport, and she and a couple other guys from the group were the only ones traveling on this flight, and they were flying to Toronto and then having a long layover over most of the night, and then flying from Toronto to Ethiopia and then from Ethiopia to Malawi. Ivy is very strong and independent. When she was four, I used to always say that she could move out and have her own apartment and be just fine. When she was in elementary school and walking to school by herself in our neighborhood, sometimes people would say, "Aren't you afraid she's going to get abducted or something walking by herself?" And I would just say, "I'd like to see someone try to put her in his car against her will. Probably not going to happen." But still, we parked at the airport. I went in with her. We checked in at the Air Canada counter, checked her bag. She had her passport, her visa, her backpack, her anti-malaria medication. And we walked over to the security line. We hugged, said goodbye. And I stood there and watched her make her way through the security line. And I wasn't expecting this, but as I watched her go, I felt like I did that first day of kindergarten, watching her go with her backpack on. New adventure. So there was an older man standing there next to me, and he said, "You saying goodbye to your daughter?" And I said, "Yes, she's going to Africa." He asked how old she was. 18, just graduated from high school. He said, "She's going to be older when she gets back from this trip." "Yes," I said. She was about to disappear from sight. She looked back and didn't see me. I called her name out. Our eyes met. She gave me one of those big, excited, nervous smiles. I smiled back, and she disappeared. She's going to be a little bit older when she comes back from this trip. Our kids, and we, all of us, have gone on those journeys where we're a little bit older when we get back. Those journeys where we're not the same when we come back on the other side of it. And this today, this from Genesis, is a painful story about a father sending his son on one of those journeys. He was, Abraham, supposed to be, as we know, the father of a great nation. But then it turned out that he and Sarah couldn't have kids. And so Sarah told Abraham to take her servant. Sarah says to Abraham, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant, and perhaps we can have a family through her." Any of us who've ever been in a relationship can predict that this probably isn't going to turn out very well. In those days, that kind of plan was a little more acceptable because Sarah owned Hagar, so she would own Hagar's child. In her desperation to have a child, this seemed to Sarah to be the next best plan. A consolation, a human way to get that divine promise filled. And so Abraham did as Sarah said, and Hagar soon became pregnant. And what did that make clear to everyone? That the couple's inability to have children for all these years, the blame fell on Sarah, not Abraham. And so Hagar looked down on Sarah and talked badly about Sarah and angered and shamed Sarah to the point where Sarah fought back and mistreated her so badly that Hagar, while she was still pregnant, fled out into the wilderness. But God sent an angel to meet Hagar there in the desert, and the angel promised her that her son, too, would be the father of a great nation, and told her to name the boy Ishmael, which means God hearkens, God listens, Ishmael. And then the angel sent her back to the village to live with Abraham and Sarah. And things settled down for a while until 14 years later, when Sarah, at the age of 90, finally conceived and then gave birth to her son, Isaac. And this is where we pick up this story today. You might remember, it's been several years ago now, Bill Moyers did a big special on PBS about the book of Genesis, and they came out with a big book about it, and he gathered a collection of scholars, and they sat around and they discussed these old stories from Genesis. And talking about our story here today, Bill Moyers said, "Sometimes the details of the stories we are discussing from Genesis sound like pulp fiction. In this one, we come to the first triangle. Two women share the bed of the same man. The squabbling gets mean. Everybody gets hurt. The stuff of a cheap novel and a fast read. But peel back the layers, and the Bible is Tolstoy, Shakespeare, Faulkner. The themes in this story," Bill Moyers said, "are deep and painful. A woman's infertility, surrogate motherhood, class differences, the price human beings sometimes pay for God's will to be done, and something else. This triangle does set off fireworks, and by the dawn's early light, Judaism and Islam go their separate ways. The story of Hagar and Ishmael is tragic. It's an awful story, really. It's kind of embarrassing that this story is in our scriptures. It shouldn't have happened. It didn't need to happen, but it did. And it's right here in our Bible. It's staring us in the face, and we can look away in embarrassment, or we can try, as I'm going to try to do here this morning, to look back at it and see what it says to us. On the one hand, this story comes across as an ancient, primitive tale. And it's a story that could be used to teach a history lesson. We could spend the rest of our time here today talking about this, that Abraham is the father of the three major world religions. And through his son Isaac is the beginning of Judaism, and then on down the line to Jesus and Christianity. And it is through the other son, Ishmael, that the tradition tells us is the beginning of Islam. And so at one level, this is an ancient origin story about the three major world religions. On the other hand, this is a painfully contemporary story. It's not just about our long ago ancestors. It's about the blended family that so many of us experience now. First wife, second wife, infertility, surrogate motherhood, children, conflict, rivalry. The story begins with a contemporary flavor with many of our blended families who talk about your kids and my kids and our kids, the complexities that come with that. Hagar may be the first person in recorded history to use the phrase that we hear a lot, the father of my children. Here we find what is maybe the first single mother pushed out to try to make it on her own. It's the story of a boy who becomes alienated from his father. It's a painfully, surprisingly modern story. And so one day, the story tells us, Sarah saw Ishmael playing with her precious Isaac. You can imagine, 90 years old, finally got pregnant. This is her baby, probably a pretty protective mother. And according to some translations, Ishmael was maybe mocking Isaac. And so all of Sarah's old fears and prejudices and insecurities come rising to the surface. And she realized at that moment that they really didn't need Hagar and Ishmael anymore. They had a son now, Isaac. And Hagar and Ishmael, more than that, were a threat because the elder son was to receive most of the inheritance. She didn't want Isaac to have to share the inheritance that she believed was rightfully his. And so Sarah told Abraham to send them away. Get rid of that slave woman and her son. It's a dark moment. And the weight of it falls hard on Abraham. It's hard. Can you imagine a father choosing between two sons? It reminds me of 45 years ago at a Cliff Temple choir party. My dad was out in our backyard, and my older brother, Brad, was playing on the swings, and I was 3 months old. My dad was holding me in his arms, and Brad lost his balance or somehow began to fall from the swings, and my dad in that moment reached out and grabbed Brad and dropped me. And it broke my leg. So he reached out and saved my brother and dropped me. So I've been in therapy ever since. Been trying to earn my father's love ever since. But can you imagine being in that situation, being forced to choose between two sons? I mean, Abraham loved Ishmael as much as any father would love his firstborn son. In fact, there's a point early on where God comes to Abraham after the birth of Ishmael and tells him once again that someday Sarah will conceive and bear a son. And Abraham says, it's okay, don't worry about it. I have a son now. It's fine. Ishmael was never second best in Abraham's eyes. He was the firstborn son of his house. And so Abraham, deeply pained by this, he did not want to comply with Sarah's wishes. But God came to him again and told him not to worry and to do what Sarah said and all would be well. I wonder if you've ever thought of this. I had never really thought of this until looking at this story. When I think of Abraham, I think of the one son Isaac and then Isaac's son Jacob and all the way down the line. And you remember Abraham is famous in our tradition for being called on to sacrifice his son, Isaac. Remember that story? God told Abraham to take Isaac up on the mountain and to sacrifice him, and Abraham took Isaac on that mountain. But we're reminded here today that Abraham had two sons. And he was called on to sacrifice them both. And in obedience to the Lord, Abraham woke up early, placed some food and water upon Hagar's shoulder, and then told them to go. Hagar and Ishmael cast out into the desert, into the wilderness. And so when I read this, like that other story of Abraham being called on to sacrifice his other son, Isaac, it's a story to avoid. And we love to hear about God fulfilling his promise to Abraham and giving Sarah a son. But if fulfilling that promise for us means Hagar and Ishmael are somehow collateral damage, then we'd rather not think about that part. Now, for those of us who are feeling in our lives right now, kind of like Abraham and Sarah did after the birth of Isaac, that we finally have what we wanted, we finally have what we've been looking for, that finally are things as we have wanted them to be, then it can really be uncomfortable to come face to face with someone like Hagar, someone who now has less because we finally have more. And in that sense, our world is teeming with Hagars, women and men who suffer to the point of not being able to sustain their own children, and while others live well. The gap between the haves and the have-nots continues to grow. Hagar and Ishmael have less because I have more. They are sacrificed to fulfill my promise. And that makes this a hard story to hear. Hagar's story is hard to hear. But for some of us, Hagar's story is our story. And we need to hear it. Because we can relate to her pain. We can relate to her sense of isolation. We can relate to her helplessness. And we need to know that just as God did not abandon her in her wilderness, that God will not abandon us in ours. That peace can be found, even abandoned in the wilderness. You know, the truth is that we all go through these times in our lives where the pain of our circumstances is such that we feel alone. Sometimes people don't know how to help us, and we don't know what to say to them. It could be depression, unemployment, grief, serious illness, disability, divorce. There are times in our lives when our pain is so raw, our circumstances dire, that other people are kind of afraid to come around. They don't know how to help us. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to begin. And so, like Hagar, we find ourselves alone and worried about our ability to take care of the people we love and unsure of how we're going to make it through the afternoon, let alone tomorrow and the next day. Abandoned in the wilderness and racked with thirst, Hagar, in desperation, puts her child under a bush and moves away so she doesn't have to sit there and watch him die. She sits and weeps. And here God comes and shows that he's concerned not only with the Abrahams and Sarahs and the fulfillment of their promises, but that God also cares for the Hagars and the Ishmaels, the outsiders, the dispossessed. And an angel of God tells Hagar that God has heard the child's cry and that she should stand up and take the child's hand, for I will make of him a great nation. And then Hagar's eyes are opened and she sees a well of water nearby where they can drink. And they're saved. And it turns out that this is going to be one of those journeys where Ishmael was a little bit older when he got to the end of it. It was a transformative journey. Ishmael grows up now under divine protection. He becomes an expert bowman. He marries an Egyptian woman. He has 12 children of his own, and he becomes the father of a great nation himself, just as God had always promised. Isaac was the favored one, but Ishmael too was a son of Abraham. Ishmael too was a son of Abraham. Thinking about that phrase, I remembered that there's another time in the Bible when that phrase is used. He too is a son of Abraham. Jesus said it. He said it of another outcast. He too is a son of Abraham. Zacchaeus. Jesus confronted this one who was considered a notorious traitor to the nation of Israel, the tax collector Zacchaeus. You remember Jesus invited himself over to Zacchaeus' house. And remember what Jesus said, today salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. God has always been seeking and saving the lost. Zacchaeus wasn't the first. He's not the last. Fred Craddock, the great preacher, New Testament scholar, tells a classic story about he and his wife going on vacation back to visit his home state of Tennessee. They were eating dinner one night out at a restaurant in the hills of East Tennessee. They had a great view over the mountains from their table. They were enjoying a nice meal. And then an older man came up and said hello. He started asking them questions like, you know, where are you from? How long are you staying? What do you do for a living? When Fred Craddock said that he was a preacher, the man pulled up a chair and sat down. It reminds me of Tony Campolo, the great professor and preacher, used to always say that when he was riding on an airplane and if the person next to him would start to talk to him, if he felt like talking, and when the person asked, what do you do for a living, if he felt like talking, he would say, I'm a sociology professor at Eastern College. If he didn't feel like talking, he would say, I'm a Baptist evangelist, and the person would never say another word to him the rest of the trip. But often, in my experience, on airplanes and other places, when you say you're a preacher, people have a story to tell. And so this man pulled up a chair, and he began to tell about how he was born to an unmarried mother. Back in those days, more so than today, there was a terrible stigma attached to a young woman who got pregnant outside of marriage, especially in a small town in East Tennessee. And so the old man, talking about his mother, said, the shame that fell on her fell on me. And when he was a boy, the kids at school would call him names, and their parents wouldn't let their children play with him. He was an outcast, just like his mother, a poor, vulnerable child. When he was about 9 or 10 years old, he started going on his own to a church and to listen to the preacher preach. And sitting there listening to that man really was a kind of sanctuary for that little boy. But he always slipped out just as the service was ending. He didn't really feel like he belonged there, and he didn't want to give anybody the chance to tell him that. And so he would slip out as they were finishing, and one time he got caught by the preacher before he could get out the door. The preacher came up behind him and put his hand on the boy's shoulder, and the boy figured he was in trouble. The preacher said, son, you're a child of, oh no, the boy thought, don't say it, just let me go. Son, the preacher said, you're a child of God. Go claim your inheritance. Fred Craddock asked the man his name. He said his name was Ben Hooper, 2 times the governor of Tennessee. And Ben Hooper said, that day made all the difference. Son, you're a child of God. Go claim your inheritance. Abraham and Sarah learned that anytime somebody tries to limit the promise of God, God extends it. That when Sarah tried to close ranks, God widened the circle. Abandoned in the wilderness, on one of those journeys where Ishmael was changed when he got to the other side of it, he discovered along the way what his name means. God listens. God listened to his cries. And God hears your cries just as surely as God heard the cries of Ishmael and Hagar. And you and I have got to somehow come to know down deep inside. It's very important. We've got to somehow come to know down deep inside that no matter how desolate we may feel, no matter how long or lonely the journey may be, that we are not alone. That God listens. And Ishmael and Hagar discovered what we can discover, that God will always extend the reach of his mercy. And that peace can be found even when you are abandoned in the wilderness. Ishmael, you too are a child of God. Zacchaeus, you too are a child of God. You too. You too are a child of God. Go claim your inheritance. We're going to sing a hymn together. It's a hymn of response. We all have ways that we will respond to the reach of God's mercy on our lives this morning. We're all in different places in our lives. Most of us will respond in our own hearts right where we are, but some of you may need to respond today by coming forward and speaking to one of the ministers here from this church to share your faith in Christ, to share your desire to be a part of this church. So we invite you, wherever you are today, to respond to the reaching hand of God and God's mercy.